This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, my name is Alex and this is Lunchbox Radio. Now, before I get started, I want to remind you, as always, to go listen to the previous episode of the podcast, which is all about Delicious and Dungeon. I love that show. That show is still not over. It's got a 24-episode run, but I thought that it had enough in its initial 12 to, like, talk about it, because I wanted to talk about it on this show for a while, on the podcast for a while, and I just took the opportunity there, and that also allowed me to finish out the season, the, like, current anime season we were in, and get more stuff to talk about easier than just going back into my Rolodex brain and being like, what haven't I talked about in, like, the past, like, 400 to 500 fucking episodes of this thing that I've done now. I saw that number on an iTunes chart recently. I was like, oh, that's so many of the of those. Oh my god. That just, so if you're wondering, like, what has he done? I've done a lot of stuff. I've done episodes somehow over, I think, 500 times at this point. But on that note, I want to jump right into what we're talking about this week, and that's a little show from the previous season. I think it's technically winter 2023. And that show is Solo Leveling.
Anime considered. Lunchbox Radio.
Now, before we jump into my thoughts on the show, I want to talk over to my lovely assistant I to give us a rough synopsis on the deal with Solo Leveling, because I always does a better job of that than I, me, ever would. So take it away, I.
Solo Leveling is set in a world where mysterious portals, known as gates, connect the Earth to a realm filled with monsters. These gates lead to dungeons, which are fraught with dangers and challenges. To combat these threats, certain individuals have awakened supernatural abilities and are known as hunters. The story focuses on Jinwoo Sung, initially portrayed as the weakest of all hunters. He barely possesses enough power to battle the weakest of monsters in low-level dungeons. His life takes a dramatic turn when he finds himself in a high-level dungeon where death seems certain. However, in a twist of fate, Jinwoo gains a unique ability that allows him to see a quest log only he can interact with. This system guides him to become stronger, essentially allowing him to level up in the real world. As Jinwoo undertakes various quests and battles increasingly formidable foes, he grows in strength, skill, and reputation, becoming a legendary figure in the hunter community. Jinwoo's journey is not just about his physical growth, but also his quest to uncover the mysteries behind the gates and his unique abilities. The plot thickens with conspiracies, powerful entities, and the overarching question of why Jinwoo was chosen by the system. Solo Leveling blends action, fantasy, and adventure, featuring intense battles, character development, and a world rich in lore and intrigue.
Okay, great. Now that that's out of the way, I want to dive into my thoughts on this thing. So, if you don't know anything about this show, which means you've been living under a rock, because it had been really publicized, and I think at the time of me recording this, it is the most popular show on Crunchyroll right now. And I think that's totally warranted, but I also, something odd happened to me when I was watching this show, in that I have also been rewatching just better shows. And that's no shade on necessarily the quality of Solo Leveling, because by all accounts, I think from what I've heard, because I haven't read the webcomic that it's based off of, because it's based off of a Korean webcomic, but I haven't read that, but by all accounts, the anime adaptation that is being done by A1 Pictures is doing a lot more with the different parts and pieces of that webcomic than the webcomic maybe did at the outset. And what I mean there is that there, I obviously, like tons of people, since they're the number two anime podcast right now, have been listening to the Otaku Anonymous boys, if you will, and they've been diving into the show because the thing to know about that podcast is entirely kind of revolved around what's popular and what does numbers, and you can hear that in what they talk about, but from what they said, that the anime adaptation of this is bringing in parts of the webcomic that did not appear until way down the line to set things up and to give things more story ground and create more tension than there was in the original source material, which I think is really interesting, and I don't think it's a bad plan. And I want to pause here because I just said that, like, something very interesting to me happened, and that I have been watching better shows, and that's no shade on this show. I don't think that Solo Leveling is bad, but I don't think it's good either. I think it's actually probably somewhere in the middle, because I've been watching, for whatever reason, got on a bender and watched most of, Blood Blockade Battlefront, which is just, I love Blood Blockade Battlefront, and I've talked about it on this podcast. You can go find it in the feed in whatever app you're using to listen to me right now. But I love that show because that show is like a crystallization of the 12 o'clock East Coast, of the 6 o'clock East Coast murder news. And if you're not from the East Coast of the United States, what that means is very specific. And that's the news that comes on, not at 6:30. 6:30 is like the world news. 6:30 is like about Gaza or whatever's happening in the world, or whatever they decide they want you to freak out about in the world, really. But the Channel 12, 6 o'clock, 6 p.m. news broadcast is like the local news, and it's for like the NYC metropolitan area. And it's basically all the insane shit that happened, like, throughout the day or the last couple of days. And if you watch Blood Blockade Battlefront, it's genius. It makes New York feel like it is just only the shit that happens in the 12 o'clock, in the 6 o'clock murder news. It's wild. It's so much fun. But, so I've been watching that, and I recently started, for whatever, probably because they brought it back out on Netflix, and I took a good hard look, and I'm like, no, I'll watch that again, and I started rewatching the, I think I'm just up to season 3 of, My Hero Academia again, and at least in the early parts of My Hero Academia, there's this, like, or in both of those shows, there's this deserved hype, if that makes any sense. And I think that's what's missing for me in the Solo Leveling. And I fully realize I will probably be in the minority for this. But like, when I'm watching Solo Leveling, it strikes me as boring. And I don't think that's because of the medium. I think I would probably have been struck as boring in the with the webcomic too. Not necessarily because it's not a good enough story, but because it's a story that had been told a bunch of times before. And it's been told a bunch of times before to the point where when you hit certain beats, they don't feel worth it, if that makes any sense. It doesn't feel like, oh, this show has done the legwork to get to give itself permission to do this. And the thing that's keeping me watching it probably is A, it doesn't take much brain power. It just doesn't take much brain power. But B, is that it seems to be doing something in terms of its opinion of what kind of power fantasy it's allowing the main character to live. So, just a quick rant about power fantasies and good and bad. But the power fantasy put forth by shows like Sword Art Online, specifically, is actually what I want to reference here, which is another A1 picture joint, surprise, surprise, is very specific and very devoid of morality and suggests that... And for me, Sword Art Online has become kind of like Hellsing Abridged, in that, like, the Sword Art Online Abridged episodes have, like, merged with the actual Sword Art Online episodes in my head, because Sword Art Online Abridged makes the character of Kirito make a lot more sense. It makes so much more sense if Kirito is a shithead. And the Sword Art Online movie, I forget the movie name, where they all get the, like, fancy AR headsets and shit, that kind of brings to bear that Kirito might be a shithead. He might be, like, the kind of person to call somebody a noob because they, like, tripped over themselves in the game or something. And that kind of crystallization of, like, this is a power fantasy for 14-year-olds is one way of... It's, a, like, this kind of not only strong, but hyper-competent thing that's going on with Kirito is very specific. But there's a piece missing there that's present. There's pieces missing there if you want to get from that to, say, Sword Art Online, to say, Solo Leveling. And that piece is this kind of resentment of society. So I'm going to go off on another little tangent here, but I've been watching the first episodes of, and I'm probably going to do a podcast about this, so I'm not going to, like, dive into it super heavily. And this is one of the reasons why I have given myself full leeway to cover the big shonen action behemoth things multiple times, because I think that it's interesting to go back and look at those things repeatedly, because their kind of build up across the seasons does matter and is interesting. So when I first watched Naruto, it was one very specific arc of watching Naruto, and you learn all the things about Naruto, and I promise this has something to do with all of this. You learn one very specific thing about Naruto, and that's, like, Naruto was kind of forced behind the eight ball as a kid from the jump. And then when you go back and you watch those first episodes, which I did recently because I was horrendously sick and I needed something just to focus my mind so I didn't have to think about going to the bathroom for the 900th time. Like, this was like a month or two ago. But you realize that all of the, like, little moments, that there are tons of little tells embedded in the show very early on that let you know that somebody is on purpose just basically fucking over a small child's life. And it like takes this whole new dimension when you're watching those first episodes of, like, oh, this sucks. Maybe we should burn down the entirety of Ninja Society in Naruto. Maybe this all sucks. Maybe everybody except for the fucking hidden village hidden in the clouds can go eat a giant dick. Because notably, the village hidden in the clouds very much treats its tail beast, Junichiri, with like a lot of respect and like gives him like a special place in society, and he's thought of as cool and interesting in a way that is not true in basically any of the other hidden villages. But and it may or may not have a whole lot to do with them all being black, but you know, whatever. The thing about My Hero in the early seasons is they are giving you those tells for stuff down the line. As far down, like, they give you tells about Deku's power set as far down as like pretty current, like season 6 or something in the first season. Like, if you're paying attention, you realize, like, oh, All Might probably used Black Whip there, by the way. Spoilers for every single show I might talk about on this episode, apparently. All Might might have used Black Whip there. All Might is definitely using the compiling quirk where you build up energy. That's how All Might jumps. That's why he's doing that weird stretch when he's talking to Midoriya, because he's, like, compiling power to jump. And they're pretty clear about that. But what they don't do is they don't expand on some of the other ideas that they bring into that show very clearly. And you kind of can't tell whether Horikoshi just isn't, and I suspect that Horikoshi just isn't interested in those conversations. He's more interested in doing like a very traditional by the numbers Shonen Jump formula thing with some twists than he is in these really dark consequences of this world he's built. And the, like, season, by far my favorite season, the My Hero Academia, is where they did the My Villain Academia thing, and it, like, switched to exclusively focus on the villains for most of a season, because that was the most interesting, because that dealt with all the questions that they hadn't been dealing with up until then. The stuff with the Yakuza was also interesting for the same reason. Cue my usual rant about Himiko Toga and, like, quirks being, like, a semblance of disability and not having quirk being a semblance of disability, or having the wrong quirk being a semblance of disability, and blah, 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 blah. But my point there is that those shows, they all have this very particular thing in that they're exceptional. Both My Hero Academia and Blood Blockade Battlefront are exceptional because My Hero Academia in its early seasons are exceptional because in their execution, they're interested in all of these, like, external questions, and they're kind of biting against this typical thing that would happen to a main character. So a perfect example of, in both cases, is if you look at all three next to each other, if you look at Leonardo Watch from Blood Blockade Battlefront, you look at Izuku Midoriya from My Hero Academia, and you look at Sung Jin Woo from Solo Leveling. In the case, let's talk about Midoriya first, because he's fresh in my brain. In the case of Midoriya, when you first meet this kid, you have a kid who has been basically let down by the entirety of society. You have a kid who, like, was told that he was disabled from a very young age, and then was immediately told that, and made to feel like he was not worth a damn thing. And you see that kid's love of just, like, the idea of being a superhero kind of propels him forward in life, regardless of the fact that he can't be. The world has told him he it is physically impossible for him. In the case of Leonora Watch, you have a character who is like fun-loving and goofy and weird. In this City of Eldritch Horrors, even though he is part of the Eldritch Horror, he like has super magic eyes. And the reason he has super magic eyes, it's also the reason that his already disabled fit sister went fucking permanently blind. And like, these two characters, in those two examples, there are two characters on whom the world has basically taken just the biggest dump on. And in case of Leonardo, like, Leonardo's whole thing is a little bit, he gets fucked over, like, every Tuesday. Usually once a day, actually. But in the case of Midoriya, after meeting All Might, there's this ramp up of, like, and his mother even says it much. She's like, I really regretted telling you that you couldn't be a superhero. I really regret telling you that, like, there was a thing that you wanted to be when you grew up and you just couldn't do it. Like, she freely admits, like, I fucked up as a parent. And that kind of thing continued, that kind of mode continues even with Todoroki in season 2 and his, as far up as I think like season 5 or something, and his relationship with his dad, who is an absolute fucking nightmare monster from hell. And but they give these characters like the space for positivity, and the characters don't, in a much more human and more, I've experienced the world and I can see that there's not necessarily any malice to everything that happens to me way. You don't get these little shitbags, we were supposed to live in a society shitbag, like, I'll pull myself up by my bootstrap asshole kids. You get these in Leonardo and Midoriya and Izuku and Midoriya. You get these characters who are at a baseline, who at a baseline can be kind. And then you have Song Jin-woo, who, when you first meet him, he seems like this lovable, affable, like, kind of character who has been stuck with the title the weakest hunter, because he's the weakest in the entire country of South Korea. But everybody kind of loves him. Like, when you first encounter him in the first episode, everybody kind of like deeply loves him, and like, they're like, oh hey, you made it out even though it's kind of cold today, and like, people are like genuinely protective of him, and genuinely they understand why he's doing it, because society has set up a way to do that. So in, and actually I'm going to loop Naruto into this too, because I think that I know that something like Solo Leveling doesn't exist without the trappings of like big shonen stuff like My Hero, like Naruto, like even something like Blood Blockade, actually, in its ways. You have this world that is so believably human in Solo Leveling. Like, it's very clear that the original source material had an understanding of, like, the kind of materialistic nature of not even only of just society in general, but definitely like East Asian society and like the need to make money and all this stuff, and like why the commercialization of this kind of thing would make it so like, yeah, he's not making a lot of money, but he's making better money than he would be working at a hamburger stand kind of thing. And it's a closed market because only so many people can be hunters and blah 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 blah. But everybody at their baseline is kind.
Until I think it's like episode 3 when they like get into trouble in like the double dungeon. And it's like it flips on a dime. It's like it turns on its heel. It's wild. And at that point I'm like, oh, this is what this show is going to be. This is what this show is going to be, and this is what this character is going to be. And it's not going to be a whole lot of... At the very least for a little while, it's not going to be a whole lot of... delineation from that. And lo and behold, I think I was pretty right in...
And I'll get to what I mean in a second.
By the end of... By episode 12, by the end of the season here, he is still that same thing. And you watch this character who the story sets up to basically be tortured to death. Kind of blame everyone in their fear responses and the reactions of these giant stone fucking dudes are gonna murder us to death. And, like, deeply blame them in a way that's not... In a way that I understand the... Gut reaction to want to. And the thing about this show, about shows like this and shows with these kinds of, like, grimdark characters, with these kind of, like, edgy, like... self-fulfilling thinking prophecy characters is like they're exploring something that is not very deep, that is not a very deep thought process for anybody if they think about it for 5 seconds. It feels like a deep thought process for the age group that it could be targeting, which is like a 14 to 17 year old kid, usually boy. But like they spend all this time with certain characters afterwards to show that like one of the guys who died straight up had a kid on the way. Like one of the guys who died who made it out alive to go back to his family. And the like leader of the little like group of hunters who went into the dungeon and then the double dungeon lost his arm. It was never regrown or healed or whatever the fuck happens there. And he now lives as a disabled person, just like as. And it's like this permanent reminder of the fact that, like, oh, we fucked up. Like, to him, that he fucked up, that he made the wrong decision, like, all the way down the line. And they do confront Sung Jin-woo's, like, tendency there a little bit in that, like, when that character, I forget the older gentleman's name, but when they first I don't see him here. More characters. I've got the character list up. When they do show him, when you do meet him again, he almost dies in that set of episodes. His name is Sung Chayul. He almost dies in that second set of episodes where he's like a supporting character. And Jin-woo is like, if you die, who am I supposed to be mad at? And this is what keeps me watching this show, and this is part of the reason why I'm talking about it, is that the show seems to be aware of what it's doing. I'm not entirely sure of that. It could just be a like new wrinkle in an old recipe, But it seems to at least have an awareness of like, no, we're setting up this weird loner, this weird kind of shitty loner who doesn't know how to work with people for a very specific reason. And the big issue I take with that kind of thing is I don't think you can... I think you need to make it so obvious that that's what you're doing and that, like, that's not a good thing. You need to make it, like, Sasuke-level fucking obvious. Because you can't count your... count on your audience to necessarily see that. I'm not saying treat your audience like idiots. I think lots of stuff has shown that, like, lots of stuff that I've talked about even has shown that, like, treating your audience like idiots isn't the answer. But I am saying be aware that, like, when you present one kind of power fantasy and you're trying to cast it as a negative thing, you need to do a little extra work to make sure that that power fantasy is, that it's acknowledged that, that, like, this is a bad thing. That, like, you're fucking up here. And actually, I'm going to loop back to My Hero here for a little bit. In the very beginning of My Hero, since once again, that's kind of where I am, in season 2, you see this kind of recklessness displayed in Midoriya that would then go on to be, like, the version of, like, the anti-hero Midoriya that, like, fights against Lady Nagant and, like, running around the city being a fucking lunatic in later seasons of the show. And everybody recognizes it. And in that moment, if you've seen the whole show or enough of the show, you realize that everybody recognizes it. But the only person who ever calls that shit out, who's ever like, this isn't fucking good, this is a bad thing, is Eraserhead, Aizawa calls it out in, like, the first couple episodes, but also Recovery Girl calls it out. She's like, you heap fucking responsibility on this teenager and you're surprised when he, like, drives his ass into the dirt. Like, what did you think he was going to do, you absolute dumbass? And she said that to All Might, like, multiple times. And lo and behold, like, later on in that show, like, that just, like, crushing amount of responsibility kind of screws with Midoriya's brain so much that he, like, pops the screw loose and just goes on a fucking just manhunt for people. It's unsettling. But so that kind of setup is done really carefully in something like My Hero. It's also done really expertly in Hunter x Hunter was gone. By the way, spoiler alert for once again, anything I'm talking about in this show, in this episode. But, like, they set up Gon to be so insanely amoral and, like, so insanely to the end of damn the consequences that when you see what ultimately happened to that character in that show, if you look back at everything, like, they were telling you the whole time that this was probably going to happen. And you just had to pay attention and look for it. But I don't think that they're... If that's the plan with Solo Leveling, I haven't read it. I know that it's done. You can go read it in its entirety. If that's the plan with Jinwoo and Solo Leveling, they're not... I can't tell. And I know it's hard to tell your first time through watching something, but I can't tell that that's what they're doing. And the show is very into glorifying the kind of, like, violent grind set that Jinwoo ultimately adopts. And here's what I want to talk about, and actually, here's why I think it's good to talk about the like hype issue of this show. This show is very popular, but I don't super hear about it a whole lot. And I think that's because it's not... And somebody... So I'm listening to Media Club Plus, which is the latest thing from the Friends at the Table crew. They're a real-time play tabletop RPG podcast, but they do like side things, so that one of their side things is Media Club Plus, and they're talking about Hunter x Hunter. That's part of the reason why Gon's storyline is so front of mind for me, because it literally came out the day I'm recording that. A new episode of that came out the day I'm recording this, and in it one of the hosts was talking about like that show compared to modern shonen. And he said that modern shonen had this quality that made it feel exhausting, in that like they introduce the concept and then they get straight to it. There's no build up. There's no wasting time. There's no like mode of come down often from big things. And if you look at My Hero Academia, they use those bumper episodes as a come down from what, as a come down or set up into the next season or previous season. And I think that really helps that show breathe in a really specific way. It also gives them a space to tell like weird stories. Like the latest episode of My Hero is literally them walking backwards into inventing Yu-Gi-Oh! It's fucking bizarre. But you need that breathing room. You need like a floor to see what normal is. So to give you a perfect example, Jujutsu Kaisen, you kind of have no idea what Yuji's home life looks like. Still, you just don't. There's nothing to suggest that Yuji has ever lived a normal life. Things you see of Yuji is him visiting his grandfather in the hospital, and ultimately his grandfather dying in the hospital with Yuji in front of him. And you don't... There's no... And I'm not saying, like, you... I'm not saying that Jujutsu Kaisen isn't good or any of that, because I think it's a lot of fun. I think it's really well done. But I think that it's missing... It's missing a sense of normal. That's a show that exists in a version of Japan that depends on you having seen other versions of Japan to understand it. And that's never, to me, a great thing. It's just not a great thing. Like, if you don't know what the deal with Shibuya is, and you're watching Jujutsu Kaisen, you don't have a reference for what the deal is there. And I don't think that helps the kind of... That doesn't help the property flourish in a way. And I think that the same is true of Solo Leveling. Solo Leveling is not interested in telling you what the deal is, like, anything about Korea, if you don't know anything about Korea, especially if you don't know anything about South Korea. It's not interested in its surroundings at all. It could take place in any city, anywhere in the world, and it wouldn't fucking matter. But you look at something like... You look at even something like My Hero Academia, at the point it's at now, not at the point that I'm currently rewatching, and they've given you a lot of information about the surrounding world. Now, I'll get into it in probably the next episode of this podcast, but they don't fully live up to that, and that causes its own problems, too. And once My Hero Academia lets that stuff fall away, I think it gets much worse. Same thing with, if you look at something like Blood Blockade Battlefront and hold it next to something like Jujutsu Kaisen. Blood Blockade Battlefront, so much of that show is about the setting and about the surroundings. It's interested in, like, the world moving around and with the main characters of that show in a way that just isn't true of Jujutsu Kaisen. And I'm not saying every show needs to do this, but I am saying that there's a kind of, like, finesse and depth that gives shows that you don't get when it's not there. And for a show that's so... For a show that's so focused on its main character, as, say, Solo Leveling is, it could use more of that grounding factor. It could... We could have spent more time with Jinwoo before he got, like, superpowers and shit. Before he basically got a video game OS in his brain. Because they say, like, oh, he's the weakest hunter. And they just use that as kind of a cudgel to, like, get you to the point of, like, oh, this is why this guy hates people. But it doesn't give you anything. And I think that's part of the reason why A1 probably decided to take elements of, whoever wrote this, with the writer on the show, took elements from later on in the webcomic and brought them forward. Because without those elements, you have this thing that's not entirely uncommon in a webcomic, but not, for understandable reasons, if it's usually one person making this stuff, you have this character who's very by himself in a very kind of, like, unknowable world that he's moving through that you just have to kind of buy in whole cloth or it's not going to work. And just the... So, and the reason why I brought Jujutsu Kaisen into this is because of the idea of, like, the super hyped show. Jujutsu Kaisen is, like, the peak of, like, hyped shonen action thing. And I think it does and doesn't earn it. I think more and more it doesn't earn it as it's going because... And I think, and if I had to guess, part of the reason I think that Gege Akutami killed Gojo is because people weren't getting the fucking message. People weren't getting the, like, or if they were, they weren't, like, expressing that in a way where he was like, okay, everybody gets the point of this character. This character is still a useful allegory of the storytelling device. When he killed Gojo, everybody sent him death threats and all this stuff. And I've talked about this before on the podcast. People just didn't seem to get the point of Gojo. People latched on to Pretty Boy, Pretty Invincible Boy. And the point of all the kind of characters of Jujutsu Kaisen is that it's like whoever has the most cursed fucking vibes in the room is the strongest. And the thing about Gojo is, like, he's fucking insufferable. You don't want to know him. Because to him, you don't know him. He knows you, and it is a pleasure for that to be true for you. You should be honored that Gojo remembers your name. Imagine what it would be like to have to deal with somebody like that. It's fucking insufferable. And, like, the fan reaction to Gojo is so unaware of what the point of him ends up being. And the point of him ends up being is, like, this hubris this hubris and everyone around somebody buying into this hubris eventually has a real cost. And like, and you see a better variant of it in characters like Krollo and Hunter x Hunter, where like the Phantom Troop is super all like, even Hisoka wants to kill him. It all in some way admires Krollo deeply. But the difference is, like, Krollo, when push ultimately comes to shove, he gets shit done. Like, I forget the manga creator's name for Hunter x Hunter, I'm a terrible person. Togashi. Togashi puts Krollo through it, too. But doesn't solve the problem by just removing him. Because the way that Gege Akutami had to deal with Gojo in the Shibuya incident was just to remove him from the scenario entirely. Like, make it so Gojo could not be involved. And I think the reason why he killed Gojo when he did in the manga is because going forward, he needed to make sure that there was a character who couldn't just solve for shit. He needed to make that clear to the audience. And in Solo Leveling, that hype train is not deserved. So you have these moments that you can tell are supposed to be these absolutely sick moments. And I'm just like, what? No. This doesn't feel like it matters. It feels like more of the same of the story. It feels like a repeat of something that we've already been doing with different paint colors. And it's just... I think there's much more interesting stories to tell than Solo Leveling. And I'm not saying that stories like Solo Leveling shouldn't be told, but I'm saying that, like, we should move forward from them in a weird way. Like if you're going to have a character who has that much disdain for people because they are trying to do some basic survival shit in a nightmare scenario, then you could spend a little while forcing that character to examine why he felt like that. Why he felt like the people trying to save themselves were necessarily even considering him. And why it was a bad thing that they didn't. Because in other shows, like I've mentioned before, you have characters who don't blame the world around them that has let them down. You have characters like Midoriya, who fully doesn't blame the world around him for the shitty hand he got dealt until he was about 15. You have characters like Naruto, who fully didn't even realize that, like, people were holding him down, and blaming him for shit that wasn't his fault. And what he, and when in later on in Boruto, he did the side character who he realized, like, oh, this same shit, like, this cycle is repeating and I was not aware. He goes and finds, like, he as an adult goes and finds and corrects for the mistakes of the past. And then you have Leonardo Watch, who, like, it's just New York eats that kid alive and shits him out over and over and over again. He's like, no, that's just life, man. All I can do is do my best and try to, like, protect the people who are important to me and, like, try and be good to people, and hopefully there'll be good, there'll be some version of good back. And it's just, it's disappointing to see a show like this now, if that makes any sense to me. I'm not saying I won't keep watching it, because I think that, because there's a small part of me that thinks that maybe this show is very aware of, like, the fact that it's got an edgelord main character and a very edgelordy, like, vibe, and it's working to make you understand that and kind of midway deconstruct it. But there's this. Right, at least at the end of the first season, there's this unawareness to what it is, coupled with the fact that it's like born out of this like hype culture that it just doesn't earn. That really just bothered me a lot. But on that note, if you like this episode, new episodes of the podcast come out every Thursday, and every time it's about a different show. Next episode will be a little bit odd, because y'all, as I've said before, I've got some real thoughts on My Hero Academia. And I think it's a good time to talk about them, because the spring season's ramping up, and it's got what will probably be the last season of My Hero is like in the spring season, but it's also in a weird, like, being broadcast at a weird, in like a weird cadence. So, I'll probably be talking about My Hero Academia again next week. But on that note, I have been Alex, and this has been Lunchbox Radio, and I'll talk to you next time.